Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host from The Hollywood Reporter, it's Mr. Tim Goodman. Hey, it's Tim from the TV Talk Machine podcast. Hello.
I see what you did there, Jason, and I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's a podcast from you and me, like always, right?
Yeah. We always do. We've been doing this for years.
197 episodes now.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We're coming up on the big 200. That's a lot of consistency.
It is. It's shocking, really.
And effort.
I'm never going to get over that it's shockingly consistent. Hey, you know who else is shockingly consistent?
Who?
The Golden Globes.
Yes, they are. Oh, my God.
Still getting it done. Whatever it is they're doing, they're getting it done.
I don't think that was the initial use of still getting it done. But I'm going to go with it on that
one. It's just I don't know what they're doing, but they're getting it done, whatever it is. Golden Globe nominations came out, and of course, they are a head scratcher, as always. And you took this opportunity to write a letter to the Emmys saying, see that? Don't be like that.
Don't be that. Do not be that. It's like, you can never take as many, you have to take as many shots as you can to hope that the Emmy people will make changes. I think it's, you know, the weird part is I know that they've made changes based on things I've actually suggested at THR in the past. And I certainly don't want to take credit for having influence in making future decisions. But I desperately want this to happen. And there was a part of me that's like, I wonder if somebody's there just like, we're not going to do that just because you won't shut up about it. There's no way we're going to do that because all you're doing is talking about it. But it's such an easy fix. And look how broke and messed up the Golden Globes are. Anybody who doesn't spend their whole time watching television and divides time talking about film is never really going to get it right. And then on top of that, it's the Hollywood Foreign Press. So
yeah,
your mileage may vary on accuracy and relevance.
Yeah, and I know that Dan Feinberg did a piece at THR about how messed up it is. They like the Kaminsky method, but not Atlanta.
Yeah. I'm actually happy Dan did that piece. You know, I didn't know if we were actually going to even do one, because at this point, you know, it's kind of the same thing. I think I could probably go back into my archive and find, I don't know what.
Can't you just get that emoji of the guy who's shrugging? Like,
yeah. Well, just
or maybe
guys.
The face palm, you know, one of those. Yeah. But that's like, what else can you say about they put on a nice party. They throw a nice party.
Yeah. And historically they've made a bunch of decisions, but this was for me, a bunch of bad decisions, but this is for me a chance to actually circle back as we started talking about and just say, look, if you wake up and you are in the TV Academy and you see what they're doing, what it should be is not just don't do that. It's we're too close to that. We're still too close to that.
Right.
And so I just took the chance to take my evergreen stance, which is to please expand all categories to 10. That solves tons and tons of problems. And then you won't have this, and you'll still have people talking about snubs, but you'll be more justified because there won't be, you know, this random lack of talented and qualified people where people are doing a face palm like me and Dan did last year. We're like, oh, really? These are your nominations. You can still have snubs. I think actually snubs is such internet clickbait. It drives so much content. And it makes people talk about it in not a bad way if it's done right. But it's not being done right at the Emmys. They're messing it up pretty much every year. So 10 in each category would still allow for everybody to complain about snubs. But they wouldn't be so angry about their complaints about snubs. It would be more contemplative, like, oh, I wish they would have considered so-and-so, rather than, oh my God, I can't believe that they snubbed J.K. Simmons or Counterpart or Atlanta. You know, that kind of thing would be avoided. And I know that someone has already come on to Twitter and said to me, oh, well, if they did 10 in every category, it would take forever to get through. And my quick reaction to him was, no, that's totally not true. The one complaint that I and others have had about every single award show is that it has a gigantic bloated middle of superfluous stuff that people don't really care about. You just cut that off and stick with the awards. I know that's something that is so simple. Again, it should be how it's directed every year and not have all these Let's look back at how editing is done. No, we don't need that. Let's put a song and dance in here. No, we don't need that either. Just give us the awards. Let the people talk. Let them finish their acceptance speeches, and everybody will be happy. So it can be done, and I'm hoping it gets done.
All right. It's a... I was thinking about it in terms of... if you're the Emmys, what you want to do is say, when the Golden Globes come out, look at those amateurs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You want lots of distance between you and them.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't be like your classmate who's failing.
Yeah.
Be a better student than that, right?
You want to be like, that's not even what we're doing over here. You guys are just having a little party and inviting some TV people, but we are honoring and celebrating with depth and smartness our whole industry. That's how you do it.
Yeah. Sounds good. Okay, so we should talk about Counterpart Season 2, a series that you and I really loved in Season 1. Season 2 premieres on Sunday. I know you've seen the first few episodes, not the whole season, but the first few episodes. So tell me, what do you think?
Well, they only sent three, unless
Tricky.
Someone got more.
Tricky stars.
You and I may circle back to that, someone, but I don't think he did. It's good. It's really good, and my review is just that, look, I only got to see three of the 10 that are coming, and a lot can happen in the other seven.
And sophomore slumps are real, right? They do exist. Seasons are hard.
Very real. And one of the most fun things that's to talk about with Counterpart, and you and I have mentioned this before, and I have this conversation all the time. It's like... what is it? Like I it's an espionage thriller that has this beautifully and weirdly connected sci-fi element to it, where there's a parallel universe, which you don't see coming at the beginning of this season. And then when it happens, you're like, what? Okay, I thought it was this show, but now it's this show. But it's still this other show. And then there's just so many nuances of the, you know, having a counterpart in another world played by multiple characters and all these twists to it. But in that first season, all those amazing reveals, even just the reveal of J.K. Simmons being fantastic in every single scene was really fresh. It's less fresh in the second season because we know he's great. And everything is less fresh in the second season because all the surprises of a freshman season have played out. And now the writers and the directors have to say, okay, now what? We've got it to this point. How do we grow it in the second season? And so as you alluded to, second seasons are very difficult. And I wonder if... Counterpart will have that problem. I would say that it's not jumping off the screen like the first three in season one. Mm-hmm. But with that said, it's the caveat of I knew that couldn't possibly be duplicated, and yet it's still very good. Those three episodes, and I'm encouraged, and I want to have faith that all the good decisions that were made in season one indicate that the writing staff and the people behind it are smart people, and they will continue with that. We should trust their track record. So that was basically my review. Trust their track record.
Yeah, and your review also walks a very careful line, because you also sort of have to say you can't jump in here. So part of your review is kind of, let me convince you to go back and watch season one of Counterpart, because if you missed it, because it is complicated and it's not going to make any sense if you just start with season two, because it is a complicated premise, and there's no point in skipping over what a great season one was. Okay, so we should talk about this just because it happened on Twitter, about Alan Sepinwall from Rolling Stone, who is a really good TV critic, and I like his work, and he works a ton and writes a ton, which nobody understands how it's possible that he can do that.
He's a robot.
He is writing and watching simultaneously. He wrote a review, and I just made the comment on Twitter, and then you laughed at it and said that basically you had thought the same thing, which is... I was trying not to insult him, but I wanted to say that I realized as I was reading his review that his review couldn't tell me anything. because his review, he talks about all of the things he didn't like in season one, and I like those things. And so I started having this moment of like, well, what is he going to be able to tell me about what he's seen of season two, since what he thought of season one does not map at all to my take on season one? It was just a funny moment where I was like, oh, this isn't going to tell me anything. Like, that's literally all it was. Is like, it's not that his review is bad, and it's not that I don't respect him as a writer. It's like, whoa, he you know, it's, I always liken it to a record review. Like, if your favorite artist comes out with a new album, and the record review in the magazine or newspaper today would be on a website, is like, this artist sucks. And then let me review their latest. And I'm like, why would I even read this review if it's one of my favorites? Like, we're not even starting on the same page here.
Absolutely. You know. Absolutely. You totally nailed it. And I often read, after I've done my reviews, I go back and I read a handful of critics that I like. Alan is one of them. And it was not that I couldn't get through it and did it, but I laughed because I did give up. I didn't actually finish going anymore because I was like, well, this is kind of pointless. He just, all the things that he doesn't like about season one were all the things I liked about
it. Exactly. Yeah. Cause he was like, well, you know, counterpart, I was watching it mostly for J.K. Simmons. It's like, J.K. Simmons is great. Don't get me wrong. He's a great hook for me to tell people, like, oh, great performance and all that. But he was sort of like, then there's all this other stuff involving, like, the worlds and the conspiracies happening and all the other characters. And all. and when I was watching the other characters, all I wanted to do was to go back to J.K. Simmons. And that was the moment where I was like, no, that's not true. Yes. There are so many good characters on this show. As much as I love J.K. Simmons in this show, at no point did I go, man, I just wish they'd go back to J.K. Simmons, because everything I thought was good about it. So that was that moment where I was just like, okay, you did not get out of it what I got out of it.
Absolutely. That's what I call that was my opt out moment in there as well. And it's fine. That's fine too. It's like, you know, different strokes.
Yeah, totally.
Thing. And Alan has, as I noted on Twitter when we were all talking together, was that, you know, Alan has said before, if we all agreed on the show, we'd only need one critic.
We're all
employed.
And I think underlying his review, what I gleaned from it, so after saying that I didn't glean anything from it, I actually did glean something from it, and was the idea that he is very wary, and I think with good reason, that so many TV shows of a particular kind of bent of spies and conspiracies and things like that, they end up collapsing in on themselves, where their conspiracy plot gets so complicated and it folds in on itself, and the show becomes about that, and it gets confused. And I mentioned at one point, you know, do we find out, because he posted that that animated GIF meme of the of the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with there's Charlie. All the conspiracy lines on the at board in the evidence dungeon and all the yarn and everything, a classic. And my response was something like, will we find out what the black oil is from the X-Files, or who's in the Red Lodge from Twin Peaks, right? Like, I get him warning about that, because is it true? Do I believe the counterpart's going to fall in that trap? I don't. But do I think it's a threat to counterpart that they could end up making it way too much about, like, who is management and who double-crossed who, and what's this overarching kind of mythology that they're starting to introduce? That's totally, like, if I had to list a risk factor for counterpart, it would be that. So I think that Alan is right in calling that out.
Yeah, and I think, just to be clear about why I was like, well, okay, this is not for me, is that a previous tweet of his was saying that I think he said he was going to rank it somewhere in the top 20, like 18 or something like that. I haven't read. I don't know if he's actually put his top list out.
Right.
And then he said, but had I been able to watch the first few episodes of the second season, it wouldn't even have made my top 20. And for me, I was like, it's going to be in my top 5 probably.
Yeah.
So we're just coming from different perspectives. So I was not, there was no need for me to go on, because he's not going to convince me to not like something I already like. That said, I am wary, just like you just said about the things, imploding into the plot. I'm worried about a lot of things that could happen to counterpart. Part of its appeal is its runaway ambition.
Well, plus, plot-wise, the last episode of season one closed the door between the two worlds temporarily. I mean, it's literally a door that was closed. It's not like they severed the connection there. But, I mean, going into season two, I immediately thought to myself, this is going to be a challenge for them. Because part of the delight is things crossing back and forth. And although you've got two storylines progressing on two different sides of that barrier, that's not quite the same as in season one when they had people crossing back and forth. It doesn't mean that it can't be good, and it doesn't mean it has to be the same to be good. But I did have that thought of like, we'll see how they handle it. It increases the level of difficulty the way they took the story.
Yeah, and just as to close this on a true note, there's no way you can start watching the second season. It's so insanely complicated.
Yeah,
I was like, my mind was like, oh my god, pinging back and forth about everything in the second season, because even though it wasn't even a year, it was close to a year between it, but a little bit short, which is impressive in TV these days. And they were often running onto their second season. So it's complicated, but I'm all on board. If it goes sideways, it goes sideways, and that's unfortunate, but we still have a great first season.
One of the interesting things about it, and I think one of the reasons it came back so soon, is that it was, when it was picked up to series, it was picked up for 2 10-episode seasons.
Yeah.
So they always knew they were coming back.
Yeah.
That there was no artificial cliffhanger at the end of the first season where they wanted to like justify coming back. They knew that they had at least 20 episodes of story to tell. And so they plotted out that they were going to go back and shoot the second season, and we get it in a timely fashion. And that's really nice. I have a slow binge update for you, if you'd like.
Hey, let's do that.
So I finished Sad Spies, Patriot, season 2 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed it. We have a letter coming up later about it.
Okay.
That I guess I could... let me see if I can find that. Basically, the idea is... I was happy that the way it ended would have been a great ending if it ended that way, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I want it to come back. I want them to do more. Let's try this. I've got the letter here. It's from Patrick from the +81 and the +49. So many countries.
Nice. Yeah.
And he says, have you gotten to the end of Sad Spies season 2? If the series were to end here, and I hope it doesn't, it would probably be a more satisfying conclusion than the end of season 1. But nothing made me happier than hearing Tim's relative confidence that the show will be back. For more, I've started my own Patriot pyramid scheme, patent pending, in which I've gotten 3 people to fall in love with the show and made each of them swear to do the same. I didn't double check the numbers, but I'm relatively certain that I am now personally responsible for doubling the show's international viewership. So thank you to Patrick for that. And I really enjoyed it. And I felt like it ended on an interesting note where there are plenty of places for it to go. And yet at the same time, it does feel like they could, they could stop there if they needed to. And everything kind of comes to a head. You mentioned, it ends up being... emotionally, and the discussion of the fact that I think one of our letter writers said the other week that whenever anybody asks if he's okay, he says he's fine. Mm-hmm. He's doing okay, which is totally not accurate.
Right. He's
right?
Not fine. Mm-hmm.
And it comes to a head in the last episode where they put a spotlight on that he always mm-hmm. says that, but he doesn't mean that. And the metaphor of him, a little bit of a story spoiler here, I'll try to obscure it, but like where we leave him in the last few scenes of that season is alone, and he stands on the edge of the English Channel, and there is a moment when he decides what he's going to do that is such a great like metaphor for
yes.
that character and where he ends up.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. So I really enjoyed it. I was happy to watch it all.
I think maybe the thing that I loved most about it is it's that scene, the final probably last 2 minutes of that scene are going to go down when Dan and I do our like favorite scenes from shows. That will certainly be one of mine. If not my top one, it'll be pretty close. I think it was really emotionally powerful, which is easy to forget in a series that is funny and action packed and clever, because it's really clever. What I love about it is that that counterpart slash sad, I mean, not counterpart. I was just about to say Sad Spies. So Patriot slash Sad Spies never ever abandons the fact that it's sad. And there's a reason why our main character is feeling that way. And it's not just a easy jumping off point for the series. It remains dedicated to following through on the fact that he is depressed mm-hmm. and he's adrift. And I love that. And so I think we can say that he's almost always this way, but when we leave him, he is adrift.
Adrift is exactly right. And alone. And, mm-hmm. It's fascinating stuff. So there's a lot going on in that show. That's the thing I like about it the most, is that it's not just an action show, but there's action. It's not just a comedy, but there's humor. It's a character study on top of it all. It's got it all.
And I will just say, to quickly add on to what I said last week, in that I think it'll come back. I do know that Amazon is from the very top at Jen Salke is very, very high on this show. And I will say anecdotally, for the first time, I think you and I probably could have claim this as well, since we're both, even though we don't live on Twitter as much as we used to, I think that we didn't see anything on Twitter last year except for you and I talking about Patriot. And this year, I see it everywhere. In fact, the other day, Todd Vanderwerf was saying, please watch Patriot. And I think there was something from Matt Zoller Seitz saying the same thing. More and more people are picking up on it, and more critics as well. And I think that's only good for the show. So I really believe there's a season three coming.
It's good. Yeah, it's one of those slow burn things, right, where mm-hmm. People figured it out eventually, but it wasn't when it was first dropped on Amazon. It's like it took the year plus. I mean, it's been a while for it to kind of seep in and for people to get it. But people are talking about it now. That first, I would bet that if Amazon looks at their numbers, I would be shocked if the pickup in viewership for season two versus like the same period when it was released, I would imagine that it's a lot higher now, that people did discover it over the interim, which is good. Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's see, do I have another slow binge? Oh, we started, so that with that completed, we started Homecoming. And I don't have a lot to report there other than to say that with the slow binge has turned its eyes to Julia Roberts and Homecoming. So that's next up for us.
Yeah. And I will just add to that, since I love that we're kind of both watching the same thing. I recently circled back and finished all of Homecoming and was going to publish today. But then I decided not to, kind of a deeper dive look at it. And where there might be some dubious parts to it, it's one of the most positively reviewed series. And I know all of us critics are preparing our end of the year list. That one's going to be high, and it's already high on several published lists from people I respect. And it will be very high on mine as well. I just have a column that says, I don't know about these two or three things. And I'm going to put some more time and effort into that, but that'll be up next week.
All right. Very nice. Want to do some more letters?
Let's
All right.
Do that.
Michael wrote in about us talking about your method of finding where shows are streaming via Google. Mm-hmm. To point out that the Just Watch app, which we've mentioned before, does a better job. And I think that's true. I had a back and forth with him on Twitter. I think what I would say is Just Watch is nice, and there's a website too you can go to, justwatch.com, and you can do that. I would say your first stop should probably just be to Google the show, because if you Google the mm-hmm. show, you may just get the results you want, and then you don't have to go to another website or launch an app and then enter in the show. You just Google the show, and if that gives you the answer, it's a good place to start. I like it for its ease of use. Yes, Just Watch is more comprehensive, although not 100% accurate either, but more comprehensive.
I found that Google is right now more accurate, but I really do like Just Watch.
Yeah, it varies. He was saying that Google's detectorists was wrong, that it had the old location for detectorists instead of the new one. So, I don't know. Go figure. All right. Gabe in the 303 wanted to know, what's the ballpark of how many shows you think you'll include in your best of the year list? Will it be more than 40 again? Also, I enjoyed your chiding of the Emmys and deriding of the Golden Globes. I hadn't even noticed that category number inconsistency, a truly strange choice by the Emmys. Hopefully, they'll heed your words. Love to your mothers and word to your mothers. Gabe in the 303. Yeah, what's the number looking like?
I think the number is going to be above 40. I'm gonna take the over on that.
Yikes! Mm-hmm. You think you're gonna hit 50?
No, I don't think so. I have done that in the past, though, in, when I combine. Because I don't think there's going to be very few network shows on there.
Right.
Again, it'll just be a handful of the comedies that are on there. The Good Place will probably undoubtedly be the highest ranked network series. Yeah, I don't know, because I think so. I think it'll be over 40, because there's so many shows from 2018 that were are still eligible. By the way, I'll just throw this out there without naming any names. A very prestigious cable channel has laughed and, I guess, cried at the same time in noting that a lot of people have left a I can't out anybody. So a lot of people have left off a show that would arguably be number one, possibly number three at the lowest, and it has started not appearing on lists because the people didn't know that it was a 2018 show, which is mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling. So that's
just
interesting.
happened so long ago that they've forgotten.
I honestly can't believe that that's true. It seems so relevant and so fresh to me. It's so clearly 2018 that I can't believe so many people are having a problem, but they are apoplectic. They're like they're calling critics and going,
just a reminder.
Yeah, they're like,
for your consideration for your 10 best list.
They're like, please realize this is 2018. I honestly don't know how anybody could make that mistake. But anyway, I use that as an example of saying it could go to 40 because there's probably more shows that are 2018. And
little surprises.
Yeah. For example, I thought for sure that, but again, maybe somebody's gonna make fun of me. I thought that It's the End of the Fucking World was 2017 because that's what it says on Ep Guides. But that was the British release,
right?
And then it came out in January in this country. So there you go. If you go by one source and then make your decision, and a lot of people look at Ep Guides as kind of a Bible for when things launch, you can run into some problems. Hmm.
This is related, actually. Rich from the 281, who says, I would like you to consider two shows that aired early in the year for your year-end lists, Magicians and The Good Fight. I think both could be considered for hidden gems. Magicians expanded and bettered its source. Good Fight showed Trump and opposition in a fair manner. 5 stars for both from Rich from the 281. I will put in a I would imagine that on some critics' list, they're going to mention, especially if they do like something about like the best seasons or whatever. Magician's season this year was spectacular. Like, it was so much better than, and I like the show, but this year they killed it. They really did nail it. So, and that was a long time ago. That was like February.
Yeah, I think Magicians could fall into a category of hidden gems for me. But I also, it's also just a victim, like many other shows, of I just haven't caught up yet.
Yep, totally.
So I'm nowhere near season 3 of Magicians, so I can't do it. The other one, I struggle with that. Two things about that. I was not really a fan of the original show, much less the spinoff.
Yeah, Good Wife. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, when that wasn't, I thought The Good Wife was only a good show, never a great show. And I have no interest in Trump being portrayed in a positive and fair light. So that's a problem.
All right, fair enough. Okay. Dean, our friend, our traveling friend, wrote in to say, I'm glad to see The Good Place was renewed for a fourth season. Which it was this week.
Slam dunk.
That was not, I think never a question, is my impression. Listening to their podcast about it, it seemed like they were all very much like needing to pretend that they didn't know, but it was pretty clear that NBC was going to bring them back. Scary to think of it being canceled before it would be wrapped up. Should they announce plans to finish up at a certain date, like the end of the fifth season or something like that? What do you think about the idea of wanting to make sure that this thing, a show like The Good Place, gets to tell its whole set of stories and then walk away?
Oh, I don't think that's necessary. I think Mike Schur has such a firm grasp on that show, and I think that he is such a creative person. I don't think he has any interest in making a show that is creatively dead, and he's obviously decided he was going to finish Parks and Rec in a super creative way. But I also, barring any ratings pressures, which are always possible in the network realm, I think that Mike could dig out a lot of fresh twists. I mean, as I don't know if anybody's caught up, but the mid-season finale has everybody flipping out that he's reimagined it again.
It's I agree with you. I think the funny thing about this show too is that it doesn't, I don't think it has a, you know, they need to tell their whole story. I think they go season to season. Maybe Mike Schur's got some end game planned that he won't talk about, but I think they go season to season with the big ideas, and they'll go as long as they think they can keep it fresh. I also get the feeling, especially since NBC is also now, in addition to saying to Mike Schur, make whatever show you want, and the result was The Good Place, then having picked up Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I kind of feel like they're in the Mike Schur business, and they really enjoy being in that business, mm-hmm. and that I can't conceive of NBC surprising Mike Schur with an end to The Good Place. No. Like, I feel like if they decide it's run its course and they want him to wrap it up, even then I feel like they'll give him another season, keeping in mind these seasons are short too. They tend to be like 13 episodes.
Yeah.
I can't envision them not giving him 13 episodes or 6 episodes or 8 episodes to wrap it up rather than having it end on a twist. So I'm not too worried about it. I think something shocking would have to happen for them not to be able to close that show out when they're happy to, when they're good and ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it totally feels agree. More likely that it'll come from the creative side, right? Where Mike Schur will be like, I think we're running out of road here. Let's wrap it up. And they might do that, right? It wouldn't shock me if Mike Schur said, you know, actually the fourth season it takes us where we want to go and we want to be done. If he said that, I would buy it. But I'm not convinced that they don't have lots more runway to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great episode, by the way. I did watch that last night when it was on. It was great. Amazing. Darcy Carden's going to get some award nominations. Maybe. Who knows? Awards. How do they work?
Tricky.
For that episode. It's amazing. All right. This one is from John in the 925, who says, the title of this is Too Much Good Stuff. Tim, I love the concept of your TV time recommendations. Maybe Hollywood Reporter can get AMPM to sponsor it. Too Much Good Stuff, right? A good corollary would be a list of serial dramas whose individual seasons are self-contained or at least understandable in their own right. For example, Justified, Veronica Mars, The Wire, Mad Men, or The Sopranos. That's an interesting idea that you can just take a season off the shelf of a show and slot it in. I think Veronica Mars, season one especially, is a good example of that. The Wire is pretty standalone season by season. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think there's threads in a lot of those. Like, it is, like, weirdly, Wire is a standalone, but is not as well.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
They have multiple story arcs that bleed into, I mean, of course, the big surprise there was the second season.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah. That kind of stands alone, right? Yeah. If you want to, hey, would you like to see something about Longshoremen?
Yes.
I got it.
You know those other guys that we spent 13 episodes teaching? They're going to be the B storyline this year.
Yeah.
Still one of my favorite all-time stories mm-hmm. ever for a television industry story. But yeah, that's a great idea. I think even not just standalone, but like ones where you finish the first season and you could say, because I'm coming up on the next installment, which is like you should be watching every season of these shows. But you know, maybe a little bit of a qualifier could be that should you not have the time to do that, maybe just this one whole season is yeah. perfect. If you want a flavor, I think Breaking Bad would work that way too.
Right, yeah, because what you don't want is to watch a season and feel unfulfilled, like you really right. have sold them part of something,
yeah.
and then mm-hmm. you really got to watch the whole show to get it, like a show that where you don't have to. It's nice, but you don't have to. It would be helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, this one is from Richard from the +61, late of the +64. I don't even know what all of these country codes are.
Dang it, I haven't a chance to research them.
He is late of New Zealand,
okay.
but now, of course, +61 being Australia. I thought that was close together. Those might be related. All right. My provincial hackles were raised when Tim slagged off a prospective Australian TV offering on Netflix, and assuming it was a worthy but relatively unsung offering like The Kettering Incident or Please Like Me, I got onto the Google machine to see what was upcoming on US Netflix so I could spring to its defense. When I saw what the show was, I cringed culturally, and I realized Tim was actually being rather generous in his appraisal. I am so, so sorry. All I can say in mitigation is that Australia is going through through a bit of a rough patch at the moment. It has a new prime minister every other month, each Trumpier than the last. And our esteemed public broadcaster is now a sadly battered and half-starved shadow of its former self. I suspect when Netflix came sniffing around for some content, the ABC took Dame Nellie Melba's advice to a fellow singer, Cinemuck, It's All They Understand, and they offered the feculent scrapings from the discarded barrel in a desperate grab for cash. It is unfortunate that Netflix has neglected any quality control. This particular outing can only damage the brand for both Netflix and the ABC. Oh well, we still have Nanette. By the way, have you caught My Brilliant Friend on HBO? I strongly recommend it based on the two episodes I have seen so far.
First of all, lovely letter.
Yes.
Super well written. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I appreciate
feculent,
all the
scrapings.
All the great word choices there were. I'm going to give you a golf clap on that. That's very good. I have not started My Brilliant Friend because it's having seen the trailers and being there during the HBO presentation at press tour, I know that you pretty much have to go the whole, it's like you've got to get the whole season essentially before you really get deep into it. And there is going to be a second season, by the way, so that's good. They're doing the next book. I will get to it. It seems much more to me like a luxurious vacation viewing than it does a frantic, how am I going to finish all these shows before my 2018 list is due. So yeah, I can't do it now.
All right. This one is from Bill in the 08865. I don't even know.
Wow. No idea.
I was very interested to hear that Northern Exposure may be returning as a reboot of some kind. It has always been one of my favorite TV shows, but to my knowledge, it's not available on a streaming service. Another of my favorites, Homicide, also seems absent from streaming. I've purchased all the DVDs for both shows, but have been frustrated in efforts to rip series episodes on Plex. Oh, this is a technology question. They don't indicate episode titles or numbers. They often rip out of order. I know that sounds confusing. I hope you understand my issue. Are you aware of any software that will rip TV episodes by title in the correct order? Thanks so much. I enjoy the show. Bill 08865. Bill, I have an answer for you. You're not going to like it because I do this too. And the fact is sometimes the discs put the episodes in out of order on the disc, even if the menus are right. The way they put the files on the disc are not good. So if you're trying to take your DVDs and put them on your server so you can watch them anytime you want, which is what he's describing here, I do that. I think the truth is you need to go to a website that does little synopses of the episodes so you can identify them as they're coming off the disc. Mm-hmm. And then you will know which episode number it is. And you should go to, I want to say it is the TVDB.com for the TV database.
Wow. Okay.
Plex uses their episode numbering scheme as their definitive episode numbering scheme. So if you can identify what episode it is and you can find out what its episode number is on the TVDB, you just name it that. You name it, season whatever, episode whatever of the show, and it should all work. And I'll put I'm typing it in right now. I will put a link in the show notes to a blog post written by my friend Casey List that's all about how you name your episode file names so that Plex picks them up and correctly identifies what episode number it is and puts them all in the right order. And it's a little bit of work, but this is part of the frustration, right, about a lot of these shows that for various probably rights reasons are not available on streaming. Although my gut feeling, Tim, is like with Murphy Brown, at least, some, if not all, of Northern Exposure will probably reappear about the time that it comes back, because they'll be motivated, right? They'll be financially motivated to pull out the old show so that people can watch that and get excited about the new show.
Yes.
So computers, tech talk.
I'm glad you took that one.
A little tech talk there. Sorry about that. But
no, I'm glad you took that one.
As I got into that letter, I realized that was probably going to be for me. Okay. Mm. Here is another one that I can help with. It's Gerard on Twitter who said, Tim, do you have a link for your Monster Christmas playlist on Apple Music? And the answer, since it's the holiday season, you can rev up Tim's holiday playlist. We mentioned it last year in episode 158. And if you go to the show notes for episode 158 of the TV Talk Machine, so that's theincomparable.com/TVTM/158, There are links to the Spotify and Apple Music versions of Tim's holiday playlist. So you can listen to all of that music selected by Tim. And there's a lot of it. Those are big playlists.
Those are big playlists. Yes. And I've added to the Spotify version.
Yes. I should copy those over to the Apple Music version. I can do that. I have that power.
Yes. That's shocking. I forgot that we had done that. You had done that.
way back when in episode 158. So long ago.
Oh, my God.
A year ago.
That is. And I'm going to... I have added to the Spotify one probably between... I want to say 15 songs, so not much, and I'll continue to. I just haven't had a chance to tweet it out, but I will say I've been listening to it nonstop since December 1st, and some of the new songs are really fun and really great.
December 1st, I think, is a good... Thanksgiving was early this year, and I was like, Thanksgiving passed, and I thought to myself, not yet. Not ready yet. December 1st, like, all right, now we'll allow it.
I bought my tree and started my music on December 1st.
Very nice. Very well done. Well, that brings us, I think, to the end. So I should tell people how that they can send in their letters. You email us, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. That's the easiest way. Or you can tweet at us, @TVTM, which is a super easy Twitter account to remember. And that's about it. Tim, anything else before we head off into the sunset?
No, that's it. And I wish everybody a great week, and we'll be back.
We'll be back. And so I guess it leaves me to just say goodbye, everybody.